The dark shadow technique. Alright, so this technique is all about becoming the person who can walk into any situation and be in a position where you know exactly what you need to do to make someone instantly like you. And it doesn't matter who your subject is. It could be a complete stranger or someone that you already know. It doesn't even make a difference if it's a famous person or a celebrity. It could be the most famous person in the world. I can still walk up to that person and make them instantly like me. And it's not really that hard to do, because I'm about to teach you how you can use the most powerful techniques so that you can bend someone's mind to instantly control the way they feel about you. So the dark shadow technique revolves around using a lot of advanced rapport techniques. And when we use the word rapport, what we're really talking about is that feeling of being in sync or being on the same wavelength as the person you're talking to. Because rapport is the connection between two people. It's the unspoken words that tell a person we're on the same page. And even though you may have heard about rapport before, I can guarantee that the techniques we're about to get into will be completely new to you. And that's why the dark shadow technique is so devastatingly powerful, because no one's ever seen this stuff before. And you can use the dark shadow technique anytime you like, in any situation. Whether you want to be served faster at a bar, you want to get off of a video fine, you want to get 50% off of a new flat screen TV, because the point is, you'll get so much more out of life when you're able to affect people and make them genuinely feel rapport with you and make them genuinely like you. And when you learn the dark shadow technique and you have the knowledge of how to create powerful rapport with people, you carry with you a special ability that not a lot of people have. It's like you can win anyone over and come out on top in any situation or in any social dynamic. Because once you've created strong rapport with a person, you've ultimately created a feeling of mutual trust and authentic connection with them. And that's something which is often hard to find. And no one else you're ever likely to meet is going to think about social dynamics and social interaction as much as we do. And that's why you're always able to be the controller in any situation. So the first step of the dark shadow technique is you want to walk up to your subject and you want to use a negative opener. So what is a negative opener? Well, the goal of a negative opener is to get you talking to your subject, but at the same time, what it does is it sets up a dynamic where you automatically have higher value than they do. So they are the ones trying to win your approval instead of the other way around. So like I said, it doesn't make a difference if they're a celebrity. It doesn't make a difference if they're an actor. It doesn't even matter if they're the most famous person in the world. This will still work because everybody is human and we all follow the same rules of psychology. So the way this works is you walk up to them, you use your negative opener, which is neither a compliment nor an insult. It's kind of something in between. So it's kind of an accidental insult or a backhanded compliment. So let me give you an example. Let's say you're staying at a nice hotel for a business seminar and you head down to the bar. It's late at night and there at the bar you see Jennifer Aniston is sitting there. So let's say you want to start up a conversation. Well, the first rule of the dark shadow technique is that if they don't know your name, then you don't know theirs. So even if you see it's Jennifer Aniston and you know it's her, you know her name, you don't want to approach her and say, "Hey, Jennifer, I loved you in that last movie." Because immediately it sets up the dynamic that you know who she is, but she doesn't have a clue who you are. So that makes her the one with the highest value. So instead, what you want to do is walk up to your target and use a negative opener, which will lower your target's self-esteem, and it will also let them know that you're not interested in them. You don't care how famous they are, how much money they have, or how attractive they are. So by using the negative opener, it lowers their value, so the dynamic then becomes a level playing field. Both of you have equal value, and that target, that person, is no better than you are. So let's say you walk up to Jennifer Aniston and you say, "Excuse me, hi, I just want to let you know you've actually got some lint right there on the back of your dress." So then you help her by removing the lint. But of course, there never was any lint. The lint is already hidden in the palm of your hand, so you can then at least show it to her afterwards. Or another negative opener you could use would be you walk up to Jennifer Aniston, you say, "Excuse me, hi, I just want to let you know you've actually got some lipstick just there on your teeth." Or as one last example, you could walk up to her, you sit down, you don't talk to her right away, but then you ask her for the time. And then after she's told you the time, you offer her a stick of gum. Now, obviously, with this one, you need to be close enough to give her the impression that the reason why you're offering her the gum is because her breath wasn't too fresh. But you get the idea. So the bottom line is the negative opener makes it seem like you're doing them the favor, so your target is then completely disarmed and they're more susceptible to your influence. And as well as that, the negative opener also lowers your subject's self-esteem so that they feel the unconscious desire to redeem themselves. So the challenge is structured and they will want to win your approval. So that's why we say these negative openers are so effective with people who are naturally high value, like celebrities or people with a lot of money like Bill Gates or Warren Buffett. And by the way, these openers are called negative openers because you're kind of saying something which is negative about your target. Because a positive opener would be, "Hi, can I just say how good you were in that last movie?" So a negative opener, you're saying something slightly negative about them. So after you've done your negative opener, then they will immediately see you as being equal value to them, if not higher value. So you will immediately be the alpha in that social dynamic. One more thing that you need to be aware of when using your negative opener to open your target or a group of people is your body language. So the main thing to be aware of is that when you're facing someone with your body, especially someone you don't know, then you are seeking rapport with them. And the person who is seeking rapport is always the one with the lowest social value. So that makes you the beta in that interaction. And it's the same thing that you learned from the authority hijack section of this course. Betas will give the alpha the majority of their eye contact, and they will also face their body language towards the alpha. So to maintain your social status, you should always arrange yourself where you're not directly facing an alpha in the first place. And it's the same thing with the dark shadow technique. So just keep that in mind when you're opening your target. Just try not to let your body language face them too much. When you're opening, if you can, you want to come in from the front, but at a slight angle, so it doesn't seem like you're going directly for them. As well as that, never lean in towards your subject because it shows neediness. Let them lean in closer to you to hear you better. And the last point is, if you can, then speak to your subject over your shoulder. So it looks like you're about to walk away any second. So your body is facing away from them, like you're about to walk away, but your head is facing towards them. Okay, so you're there and you've done your negative opener. They're trying to win your approval, and they see you as someone who's either higher value than they do, or at least equal value to theirs. But remember, right now, what you're doing is you're just kind of hovering there, and after you've done your negative opener, unless you keep the conversation going, then you've got no reason to still be there lingering around. So the next step is to sit down. And as you're sitting, you want to give yourself a forced time constraint. So what a forced time constraint does is it lets your subject know that you're not going to be trying to talk to them all night. Because if you don't know someone, then you sure as hell don't want them lingering around you all night long. And this is especially important when you're using the dark shadow on someone who's a celebrity or someone of high social status, because they most likely have people coming up to them all the time saying how much they love them or how amazing they thought they were in the last movie. So as you're sitting down, you say your forced time constraint, which sounds something like this. "Listen, I can only stay for a second because I've got to go meet some friends." And then, as you're saying your forced time constraint, you want to follow up with asking them their opinion on something. So you would say, "Listen, I can only stay for a second because I've got to go meet some friends, but you might be able to help me out with something, and this has been driving me crazy all day long. Tell me, what's the next line of this song?" "I'm all out of love, I'm so lost without you, da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da." So the point is, it doesn't make a difference what it is. It doesn't have to be that I've just used. It could be any question. Just ask them a question and get their opinion on something. So the next time you have one of those questions on your mind, then just write it down, remember it, and you can use it next time using the dark shadow technique. So you ask them a question or you ask them their opinion on something, and that conversation is probably going to keep you going for 1 or 2 minutes. Then when you can see that the conversation is running out of steam, you want to start demonstrating value. So your goal here is to convey your personality and to get your subject curious about you. So when you're demonstrating value, your goal is to reach the hook point. And what that means is that you've demonstrated enough value so that your subject decides that they enjoy your company and that they don't want you to leave. Now, if you're feeling like you're having a hard time reaching the hook point, then you just need to keep on plowing. And what that means is you blitz your subject with routine after routine without even waiting for a response. Just keep on plowing. And if you can keep going for long enough, then usually, After about 10 minutes, your subject will naturally feel comfortable around you and it will open up, so you automatically reach the hook point anyway. So after you've reached the hook point and you're getting that feeling that they don't want you to leave, you can then move on to the next part of the dark shadow technique, and that is that you want to move on to normal conversation, while at the same time, you also want to mirror their body language. And the reason why we start mirroring our subject is because we all like people who are like us. So when you mirror someone, it makes them have more positive feelings about you. And as an example of how powerful mirroring someone's body language can be, one experiment which demonstrated the success of mirroring took place recently, where the participants were asked to give their opinion about a series of advertisements shown to them. During the experiment, a researcher copied half of the participants as they spoke by mirroring their posture and the position of their arms and their legs. Then, after the researcher had mirrored the participants' body language, he accidentally dropped a few pens on the floor. The findings of the experiment were that the participants who had been mirrored were 2 to 3 times more likely to pick up the pens than the participants who did not get mirrored. Or as another example, a similar experiment was conducted at Duke University, where students were asked to try out a new sports drink. Then after they tried the drink, they had to answer some questions. The interviewer mirrored half of the participants in the experiment with a 1 to 2 second delay, and none of the participants that had been mirrored even realized the mirroring had taken place. But at the end of the experiment, the participants who had been mirrored were significantly more likely than the others to say that they would buy the drink and also to predict the drink's success in the marketplace. So that proves just how devastatingly powerful it can be when you mirror somebody's body language. And one other thing about mirroring is that we all do it all the time unconsciously anyway. So when people are getting on, they do things like blink at the same rate, adopt the same breathing patterns, mirror their postures, their gestures, and even their tone of voice, and even do things like drink at the same time. But one thing that you need to be aware of is that you can't make it too obvious. You do not want to make it too obvious that you're mirroring someone. So the best way to keep it covert is to leave a good 10 seconds before mirroring their changes in body language, posture, or whatever it is they're doing. Okay, so in a second I'm going to get into how you can really build deep rapport with someone. But first, I want to talk about some of the things you need to avoid when you're doing this part of the dark shadow technique. And this is very important, so please listen carefully. So the first thing you want to avoid at all costs when you're building rapport is being too nice. Now, I want to be sure you understand exactly what I mean when I say being too nice. Because, of course, you want to be friendly and polite and open to the interaction, but just be normal, just be yourself. Everybody has met someone and they're just too nice and they come across as false and it also makes them seem like a pushover. The second thing you want to avoid is trying too hard. And this one ties in with being too nice. In fact, there's a fine line between the two. But trying too hard is one of the worst things you can do. If you're trying to do everything the other person wants and you're agreeing with everything they say, then instead of building rapport, you'll actually break it. The third thing you want to avoid is wanting something too much. And the best way I can illustrate my point on this subject is to tell you about when I went to buy a TV recently and the guy came over and he was just too pushy and he was acting like he was my best friend, telling me he would try and get me some extras thrown in for me, and instead of making me want to buy the TV, it just made me feel like, why would he get extras thrown in for me? He doesn't even know me, and it made me like him even less, and in the end, I didn't buy the TV, and he lost the sale. The fourth mistake you want to avoid is pretending you're interested when you're not, and this is a mistake I see a lot of people making who are new to the idea of rapport, and they're trying to create that in-sync feeling in any interaction. So if the conversation happens to fall on a topic that you're not really interested in, you don't have to pretend that you are. This won't create a feeling of rapport. In fact, as with all of these rapport-building mistakes, it will do the exact opposite. And if you don't know anything about the subject you're talking about, then you will either be caught out or you will subcommunicate that you're not interested and your subject will catch on. Okay, so just keep these things in mind when you're building rapport. So now I'm going to lead you through the things that you definitely want to be doing when you get to this stage of the dark shadow technique. So we've already talked about how powerful it can be to mirror someone's body language, but there's a lot of other things you can do to build deep rapport, and here's just a few of them. For example, something that we've already talked about in the authority hijack section, but I think it's important, so again, I'll mention it here. You want to give something of yourself away, so be open towards people. Tell people about yourself other than the usual name and what you do for a living. by opening up to people, you give them a window into your personality and you give them a chance to get to know the real you. And as well as that, what you're subcommunicating to them is that you're open to them, so it's okay for them to be open to you. And when you really open up to someone, you'll find that they start telling you things about their lives that they normally wouldn't tell people. So you're communicating on a much deeper level than anyone else. Now, I'm not saying go around telling people your deepest, darkest secrets, but just be the kind of person who lets people know who they really are and what they're really all about. If you're talking to someone and they're telling you about some kind of experience that they've had, and you've also had the same experience, then tell them. Let them know that you have this thing in common. Talk about it in detail and relive the experience. So if you're talking to someone and they tell you they've been skydiving, then if you've been, then talk about that. Talk about the thrill of standing on the door of the plane, looking down, and your heart is pounding as if it's going to break out of your chest, and feel that connection. And with that said, always try and see where the other person is coming from. See things from their perspective. And this is a powerful skill to have when you're building rapport and connection with someone. If I'm talking to someone and they happen to mention that their grandmother died, then I will liken that to the feeling that I had when my grandmother died. If I'm talking about the feelings I had during that time, it will strengthen the bond that I have with this person just by sharing the experience with them. So don't be afraid to talk about deep and emotive topics that affect people's lives. When people can see that you can talk about these things in an intelligent way, it shows maturity and it shows a depth of character. I will give my genuine opinions on topics and explain why I feel the way I do. And this is because, have you ever realized how hard it is to connect with someone who agrees with everything that you say? You can't do it because there's no substance or there's no depth there, so you can't build a meaningful connection. So if I disagree with someone, then I'll let them know that I don't agree, and I'll always do it in a respectful way, but I'll let them know the reasons for my opinions. Another thing is I never judge anyone. Whenever I ask questions and find out about people's lives, I'm never judgmental with their responses. If someone feels like they're being judged by a person, then they're unlikely to truly open up to that person. So it's very difficult to create rapport with a person who's keeping their barriers up. And as well as that, when people realize that you're not going to judge them on what they tell you, then over time people will realize that they can trust you with just about anything. And this will lead them to opening up to you more, but you should know that some people will take a longer time to open up than others. But if you use the principles that I'm talking about on every person you meet, then people will open up a lot quicker than they would normally. I will also let people see that I'm a multidimensional individual. I will constantly mix it up from being comedy Cameron to serious Cameron to deep and meaningful Cameron. And not only does this make people see that you've got depth, but it also increases your chances of finding a connection with someone in the first place. So some people that you meet will just want to laugh all the time, and others will want to talk about politics. And by mixing it up, you're increasing your chances of connecting with people. I also take a genuine interest in people, so I ask them questions about their life, and I really listen to the answers they give me. I try to have conversations that are a little bit deeper than the usual chit-chat people are used to. That way, the next time I see that person, I have something to talk to them about, or I can ask them how their driving test went, or how their holiday was. Also, as well as that, I use self-deprecating humor. So I have the ability to laugh at myself, because when you show people that you don't mind laughing at yourself, you're showing them that you don't care what other people think of you, which of course, as you know by now, is a very alpha trait to have. Also, people generally find it easier to relate to someone who can laugh at themselves. I mean, think about how hard it is to relate to someone who takes themselves too seriously, who doesn't let anyone make a joke at their expense. So the bottom line is, just be cool, have a laugh, and laugh loudly and freely. So if someone says something which I think is funny, then I don't just sit there trying to look cool and trying to be all alpha. Instead, I let people know that I thought their joke was funny, and I laugh out loud, because that's actually the more alpha thing to do. Also, I will pay genuine compliments to people. So if there's something I like about a person, then I will let them know. And it doesn't make a difference if it's a guy or if it's a girl, I will still compliment them. So if a guy has a new suit and I like it, I will tell him. I'll tell him he looks good. If I find a girl and she has a strong set of family values, then I will let her know that I think that's a very attractive quality to have. Because compliments are not supplication, as long as they're genuine and they're delivered in the right way. Compliments are actually a sign of inner strength, and most people who are insecure find it hard to praise somebody else. All right, so that was just a few of my guidelines for engineering powerful connections with people. And that's usually enough for most people, but I'm also going to let you in on one of my secret weapons, which is called the secret questions. So this is my favorite part of the dark shadow technique, and it's called the secret questions. Now, the reason why these questions are so powerful is because if you ask these questions to someone, then create that same kind of connection with the person that would usually take you months or even years to find. So I'm going to go ahead and give you the questions right now. And there's a lot of them. There's actually 36 questions. And you don't need to worry about writing them down, as I've included them in your PDF workbook that you can download when you're ready. And the idea with these questions is that you ask the questions to your target, and they answer it, and then you also answer it as well, as if they were asking you. So right now I'm going to tell you the questions, and then I'm going to talk some more about the secret questions and the different ways that you can use them when we're done. Okay, so question number one. Given the choice of anyone in the world, who would you want as a dinner guest? Number two. Would you like to be famous? In what way? Number three. Before making a phone call, do you ever rehearse what you're going to say? Why? Number four. What would a perfect day look like for you? Number five. When did you last sing to yourself? When did you last sing to somebody else? Number six. If you were able to live to the age of 90 and retain either the mind or the body of a 30-year-old for the last 60 years of your life, which one would you want? Number seven. If you could wake up tomorrow having gained any one quality or ability, what would it be? Number eight, name three things that we appear to have in common. Number nine, what in your life do you feel most grateful for? Number 10, if you could change anything about the way you were raised, what would it be? Number 11, take 4 minutes and tell me your life story in as much detail as possible. Number 12, do you have a secret hunch about how you will die? Number 13, if a crystal ball could tell you the truth about yourself, your life, the future, or anything else, would you want to know? Number 14. Is there something that you've dreamt of doing for a long time? Why haven't you done it? Number 15. What's the greatest accomplishment of your life? Number 16. What do you value most in friendship? Number 17. What is your most treasured memory? Number 18, what is your most terrible memory? Number 19, if you knew that in 1 year you would die suddenly, would you change anything about the way you're living now? Why? Number 20, what does friendship mean to you? Number 21, what roles did love and affection play in your life? Number 22, tell me five of my positive characteristics. Number 23, how close and warm is your family? Do you feel your childhood was happier than most other people's? Number 24. How do you feel about your relationship with your mother? Number 25. Make three true we statements. For instance, we are both in this room feeling X. Number 26. Complete this sentence. I wish I had someone with who I could share. Number 27. If we were to become close friends, what would be important for me to know about you? Number 28. Tell me what you like about me, and you have to be honest. You have to say things you normally wouldn't say to someone you've just met. Number 29. Tell me an embarrassing moment from your life. Number 30. When did you last cry in front of another person? When did you last cry by yourself? Number 31. Tell me something that you like about me already. Number 32. What, if anything, is too serious to be joked about? Number 33. If you were to die this evening with no opportunity to communicate with anyone, what would you most regret not having told someone? Why haven't you told them yet? Number 34. Your house, containing everything you own, catches fire. After saving your loved ones and pets, you have time to safely make one final dash to save any one item. What would it be and why? Number 35. Of all of the people in your family, Whose death would you find most disturbing and why? Number 36. Share a personal problem with me so I have to try and give you advice on it. Alright, so those are your 36 questions. And you might have noticed that as you move through the questions, they slowly get you talking pretty deeply about things, about your life. And that's the whole idea. Because when you think about a typical conversation between two people, it's normally just the same mundane thing that you've heard 1,000 times before. So it's hard for you to really connect with someone. And I've used the secret questions hundreds of times, and every time I use them, by the time I get to the last question, people feel like they're in such deep rapport with me that they don't want me to leave and they want to keep the conversation going. So don't be surprised if when you use these secret questions, you have a lot of people start asking you for your phone number. Now, one thing I will say is that the best thing you can do is to commit these questions to memory, as it just makes the whole process of asking the questions a lot more powerful. And I know it might seem like a lot of work right now, but once you get to the photographic memory section of this course, you will know exactly how to do it. Okay, so how do you use these questions and how can you introduce them into a conversation? Well, obviously you can introduce them into a conversation any way you want, and there's no right or wrong way. But one thing I will point out is that I think these questions have quite a flirtatious nature about them. So that's one thing to keep in mind. So this part of the dark shadow I would only use on someone who you're looking to form a really powerful connection with. So that would be someone who you find attractive, or maybe someone who with you want to take things to the next level. So if that's something you decide you want to do, then all you need to do is introduce the questions into the conversation by saying something like, "Hey, have you ever heard about the secret questions?" And of course, when you say that to someone, they're immediately going to be intrigued. I mean, who wouldn't be? If someone came to me and started asking me if I'd heard about the secret questions, then you can be sure that I would want to know about them. So that's one way you can use them. But the bottom line is just be creative. You can really use them any way you want with anyone you want. But just keep in mind that these questions are extremely powerful, and I mean that when I say it. And what's so cool about building deep rapport with someone like this is you'll find out that after about 20 minutes or 25 minutes, you'll find yourself knowing more about this person than probably their best friend even does. And guys, when you have this kind of knowledge, when you know what this person is interested in, you know that they've been skydiving, you know that their grandmother died, you know that they work in real estate, then they will feel like they've known you a lifetime. So always ask questions, get to know people. The more you open up with someone, the more open they will be with you. And this person is probably going to have the best conversation of their life. They're meeting someone who has the same interest as them, and they're talking about things that they love to talk about. So what we're doing is we're slowly edging towards a person's representational system. So the next step of the dark shadow technique is representational systems. And this is what we've been leading up to. We've slowly been edging towards a person's representational system. And once we get to someone's representational systems, then it's game over. So what are representational systems? Well, people perceive the world through different representational systems that revolve around the three main senses of visual, which is, of course, what you can see, auditory, what you can hear, and kinesthetic, which is what you can feel. So those are the three main representational systems through which a person perceives the world. And if you can determine which representational system someone is primarily using, then you can make them feel like you're speaking their language, which is a powerful position to be in. So if you take a visual person, they perceive the world based on what they see. And you can often tell someone is visual by listening to the types of phrases and wording they use. For example, they might say, "Look, I don't think you're seeing the whole picture." So that's a visual person. So they speak in terms of what they see. They will say that they can picture something. They use words like bright or flashy. Or they talk about colors, seeing things from a certain perspective. An auditory person perceives the world based on what they hear. So you often hear an auditory person saying things like, "Listen, you're just not hearing what I'm saying." And finally, a kinesthetic person will perceive the world based on what they feel. So they will say things like, "I just don't feel like it." Now, obviously, I've only just given you one example for each representational system. But if you download the PDF workbook, then there's hundreds more. But the point that I want you to become aware of is that everybody is going to lean towards one of the three representational systems. And if you can identify which representational system they're using, then you can basically mirror the way they talk. And when you do that, people will feel like you're connecting with them on a much deeper level. One thing to point out, though, is that even if someone is a visual person, it doesn't mean that you will never hear them use words or phrases that an auditory or a kinesthetic person might use. And it's the same with auditory and kinesthetic people. They also might use words and phrases from the other representational systems. But the point is, if you know what to look for, you will always notice that a person will have one representational system which is more dominant. And the thing you should know is that just because someone is visual, it doesn't mean they have better sight, or it doesn't mean, if someone's auditory, it doesn't mean they have better hearing, or if someone's kinesthetic, it doesn't mean that they have a better sense of feeling. All it means is that whatever representational system is dominant within a person, they will depend more on that sense rather than any of the other ones. So when it comes to this stage of the dark shadow technique, the first thing you need to do is identify your subject's representation system. And when you're talking with them, just pay attention to the type of words and phrases they're using. And you should be able to figure out whether they're visual, auditory, or kinesthetic. So then, once you know which representational system a person has, you just want to start using those same types of words and phrases from that representational system. Then if you really want to step it up a gear, if you're interacting with someone and you figured out which representation type they are, then you can increase that feeling of rapport even more by using the next part of the dark shadow, which is to use someone's sequence against them. When you use someone's sequence against them, what you're actually doing is finding out their sequence of representations and then using that process to get specific behavior from them. Now, I know that probably sounds a little bit confusing, so of course we're going to go into it a little bit more deeply. Everybody has a different sequence of representations for falling in love, for buying something, for selling something, for hiring someone for a position, for giving someone a pay raise, for liking someone, for wanting something, and for pretty much anything else you can think of. So if we take the process of falling in love, for example, then if we can figure out someone's sequence of representations of falling in love, then the chances of that person falling in love with you are a lot more likely. Or if we take the process of your boss giving someone a raise, then if we can figure out his sequence of representations for giving a raise, then the chances of you getting that raise are greatly increased. So how can we figure out what sequence of representations any one person has so that we can influence their behavior? Well, the way to do it is you want to get that person to replay some behavior you want to figure out, and then you can play it back to them to increase the feeling of rapport. So the way we find out someone's sequence of representations is by asking specific questions about the process we're interested in engineering. And what these questions will do is get your subject to express themselves using images, words, sounds, and touch. So let's take the example of feeling attracted to someone. Let's say you're on a date and you want to find out your date's sequence of representations for the process of feeling attracted. So now all you have to do is ask the specific set of questions to elicit the right sensory-based answers. So the first question you need to ask is, can you remember a time when you were really attracted to someone? Now, one thing to point out here is that these questions I'm giving you as examples are just models. So you should model the questions you are going to use on these questions I'm giving you. You don't have to say them word for word exactly like I am. Also, if your date is already talking about someone they were in love with, then obviously you already know that they can remember a time that they were in love. So you can just move on to the next question. So then you can say, what was it about him that you found so attractive? Something he said, or something that touched you, or the way you felt? And then let's say she says, well, first of all, it was definitely the way he looked. I can remember seeing him from across the room and just wanting to meet him. So obviously, based on this answer, we know that her first representation in the sequence is visual. She says she saw him from across the room. So then we can move on to the next question, which is, so after you saw him from across the room, what was the next thing that really attracted you to him? Was it something else you saw, something you heard, or something you felt? And then let's say she answers with, well, after I saw him, I just felt like I had to go over there and talk to him. It was like something was pulling me in like a magnet. So then based on that answer, we know that her next representation in the sequence is the way she felt, so kinesthetic. So next up, I would follow up with the question, after you felt like you just had to go over there and talk to him, what was the next thing that really attracted you to him? Was it something else you saw, something you heard, or something you felt? And then, let's say she replies with, well, after I did finally get up the courage to go over there and talk to him, I walked over, and as soon as he spoke to me, he just sounded so cool and so confident and so charming. So obviously, based on that answer, which was an auditory answer, we know that this woman's sequence of representations for feeling attracted to someone is visual, kinesthetic, then auditory. So now that you know her process for feeling attracted to someone, all you need to do is play back that process, but change the content. So all you need to do is say, yeah, I totally agree. It's the same with me. When I'm really attracted to someone, it's like I can just see them, and it's like I get this feeling of butterflies in my stomach, and then I hear this voice in my head that tells me, you're really attracted to this person. So can you see how we use the same sequence of representations, but just change the content? So the sequence of representations was visual, kinesthetic, and then auditory. So for visual, I said, it's like I can just see them. Then for kinesthetic, I said, and it's like I just get this feeling of butterflies. And for auditory, I said, hear this voice in my head that tells me you're really attracted to this person. So by playing back someone's sequence of representations to them, it will make them feel completely different about you because you're talking their language. They won't know why, but they feel incredibly connected to you. And as I said, you can use this in any context. It doesn't just have to be making someone feel attraction for you. Because as I said, the reason any of this works, the reason you can instantly change someone's mind about you is because you're outthinking, you're outsmarting, and you're outplaying the dynamics of any social situation. You can be having an interaction with someone and you can know more about them than they know about themselves. So you can be in an interaction with someone and you can know more about them than they know about themselves because you are leading the interaction and you are steering the conversation in the direction that you want it to go. Okay, so that's the dark shadow technique, guys. I know it's a lot to take in. I hope you enjoyed it and I'll see you in the next audio.